that I was going to get, it already started. I was on TikTok today and it told me that I was going to get married in 2024. Hold on. We need you to move your mic. Pull your mic up close to you.
Like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually recording already because I hit the button. Like, I've been like so super chill with you. Like, I'm in a different flow, which is so good.
Good.
Like, so good. Okay. So, hello, everyone, and welcome to the dinner table. You guys straight up jumped in the middle of it this time because for whatever reason, I just pushed record and then started recording, and it is what it is. I have with me a new friend who I, however you want to look at it, embarrassingly or not embarrassingly, thought to myself the moment that I met this person, like, I have a crush on this chick. She is so super cool. Like, how do I get her into my house? Like,
feelings mutual, 100%.
Raven Rains. Yes. And you're fairly new to our area.
Yes. We moved down here in May of 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That's something too. That's always been a thing about me is that I look for the transient community because before, now it's changing because there's people moving in to the area from all over the country and all over the state. Mm-hmm. But in the past, the only new people from other places that we got were like military people, right?
Oh, wow.
And so it was very much like I got to know friends. I become really close with them for like 2 years and then they would like move on, you know, to other places. But I tended to hang out with those people because those were the people that would help me like, you know, tack down bigger ideas, the things that I wanted to do that this community wasn't like, you know,
ready for.
Yeah. Like yoga, you know, mm-hmm. like the early days of yoga, the early days of like cloth diapering your babies, the early days of like all of that. I had to find those moms in order to like the La Leche League, you know, all that. I had to find those moms in order to have anybody that I hang out with, which I think is essentially what we were just talking about. What you said was that you came to meet me at the farmer's market. You're a vendor at the farmer's market and you came over and you're like that girl. Like I want to know her.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to walk into a college classroom and I remember specifically, as a matter of fact, my friend Stacy is the one that I can think of, like, but there's other people, but Stacy's the one that like became like a hardcore friend. And I would walk into a room and I'd look at the room and I would be like, okay, who do I want to sit next to? And it was very purposeful. Like I knew I was doing it. I knew that I was like, I think I can be friends with that person right there. You know, something about their hair color or the cool glasses they wore or style. Style is attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Style is always very first initial easy for me to find attractive. So I would go out with her. And then I remember that I had the opportunity to go. She moved because we went to Del Mar College together to the University of Texas. Mm. So she moved to Austin.
Right.
She was living in a nude co-op in Austin.
Nice.
And those
very
were,
Austin.
Like, I feel like now, like this stage of age, you know, about to be 45, like, I feel like I'm like reliving things that I didn't get to live, or like I'm, that's where I want. That's what I want. It's part of what's happening with me.
Like picking up where you left off kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the 25-year-old version of Aislinn, but with the wisdom of a 45-year-old woman.
That's
like,
very interesting too, because you know how I describe Corpus to a lot of people when I put it on the map for them, because they're always like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? And I'm like, there's this really cool beach town. You know, they're like, no, there's not. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And they always look it up. It's always describe it as 1990s Austin.
Yeah.
That's the vibe currently that it has now.
Correct.
Right.
You know what? Honestly, that's exactly what I just told somebody the other day. Yeah. I was like, okay, do you remember when you could afford to live and it was like coffee shops and just like hippie co-op, you know, living and, you know, yeah, like art on the walls, you know, painting everywhere and beach bums everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm getting that feeling. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here's the thing that I love the best about that is that I feel like I held it down for us. Like
yeah.
I just like,
oh, yeah.
The 20-year-olds can thank me. Like I held it down for us. Like I got like, oh yeah. And I'm like, you know that I'm not going to take all the credit because I understand there's a collective of people doing things.
Right.
But seriously, man. Like
yeah, you're ahead of the game for sure. But it's a vibe that I feel like, I mean, I'm here, right? Like
yeah.
People like us are flocking to this area. Mm-hmm. Because Austin's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
And the prices are definitely not what it used to be.
No.
And it's great for millionaires. Congratulations to them. Anyone buying a lakeside property in Austin currently, you know, yeah. What a great life you must have.
Yeah.
But for the rest of us, normal people, we're looking for somewhere cool
with
things to do. Water's a plus.
Yeah.
You know, and the vibe is great.
Outdoor activities is like.
And I know a lot of older people or people that have been in the Corpus area, they talk kind of down on the area. And I'm thinking, well, you're just not seeing it for what it's, I guess, could be.
Yeah. Right. Well, I always say that we have trauma. We have some slave mentality trauma actually down here, some poverty, lack mindset going on down here. Part of what we were talking about earlier, I'm not sure I want to completely go down this road. Some people just aren't meant to get it.
That's right.
I actually see when you hear people talking about different worlds, like people living on different worlds and being in the void between one world and the other world. Like I actually see different worlds now.
I hear you.
I literally can see these things forming. I'm like, oh, that's really trippy.
Yeah. Well, I definitely feel like we're all playing by the same rules.
Uh-huh.
But some people don't take advantage of that situation.
Well, but do you think that they're like clicked into it? Because that's something, like, to me, it's like, I think that when you said they're not supposed to know, right? I think there's a button inside your brain.
Right.
Conceptually, even you might see, this is where I come from with my ex, right? Conceptually, he understood, intellectually, he understood everything I was talking about, but he didn't have a clue what I was talking about. And in some ways, I didn't have a clue what I was talking about, right? Until I finally embodied it. It's the click that hasn't happened.
Right.
It's the aha, and it's enough of the aha, and it's enough of the trust of the intuition and the...
Well, I think that the people that have stayed, good for them, and I hope they do well with it, because I do think that Corpus is going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to go in an even better direction very rapidly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because Austin, it's not what it used to be. Every single old hippie that brought that vibe, keep Austin weird, to Austin, isn't there anymore.
Right.
They've all moved either to California or to a beach somewhere else. Okay. Yeah.
So it was probably 2010 when I was in the early stages of just knowing that I was at the end of my relationship with my children's father. Yeah. And I was making trips to Austin, staying in co-op, hippie, vegan, nude, if you choose to, with my friend. I wasn't doing anything bad. I wasn't, and you know, I was hanging out with bands. I was hanging out in Austin. I was, you know, going to South by Southwest. 2010, you could actually still go to South by Southwest. Right. Like you could still be in the vibe of
it,
right?
Walk it the whole time.
However, I do remember 100%, I went and I walked into this, wherever I was, underground bar thing or whatever I was in that night. And I looked around and I was like, oh, the LA douchebags have straight up taken this place over. They're here. Like, it was like, I felt like we had been invaded. I was like, they're here.
And it happened rapidly. Mm-hmm. Between 2007 and 2010, it was like a total takeover. And everyone's just kind of like, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
What happened?
Right. I go back to, I'm like, now I'm really enjoying this conversation because I'm talking to somebody that like watched it, was in it, lived it, like
I was deeply into the party scene from 2007 to 2009. So, I mean, I remember it was people, men in tight pants, you know, bands and, you know, the whole metal scene and like all of that. And then very quickly, it wasn't that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it was more like beauty bar scene and how that kind of turned to yuppie, very upscale. Everyone's from California. I mean, it was almost every night that we went from everyone was kind of on the same vibe to, what the hell's going on? Who are these people?
So my thing was, I think about this guy, right? And he was the musician. He had bell-bottom jeans on. He had the costume on. He was wearing our costume. He was barefoot and he had his felt hat on and he was wearing our costume. And I was like, but, and he was like, and then when he came over to talk to me, you know, he wasn't like, cool. He was like, I'm making a face, but okay. So then, so then, you know, like you watch the Rainy Street stuff happen.
Oh, yeah. No, my best friend in life lived on the corner of Cesar Chavez and Rainy Street.
Uh-huh.
Literally on the corner. Uh-huh. Imagine that. There used to be a big house there that was broken up into several different apartments.
Yes.
We threw amazing parties there. And then all of a sudden was notice from the city. It's going to be torn down. You have 30 days to leave.
Okay. So I lived that Rainy Street era stuff. I didn't live there, but that's where I came and that's where I hung out. And that's where I spent most of my like barefoot walking around, just hanging out. Mm-hmm. The main reason was because Garage Mahal was there. Do you remember when Garage Mahal was there?
It was not.
Like it was, they had, it was a mechanic shop and an Indian woman married a guy that was a chef, but they also had this mechanic, you know, whatever. Anyways, they turned it in. It was like one of the early food trucks in Austin.
Oh, cool.
Right. And it was Garage Mahal, it was Indian food. And then they started kind of building out. And then there was this other food truck that went in over there. And then there was one bar, Clive, I think. Is that what it was called? I don't remember. There was one bar on the corner. And it was nothing. Like, there was nothing. Like, you didn't even want to park. You didn't want to, like, it was like you were talking about. It was like a house with like,
it was a neighborhood of older houses. Yeah, and across from the houses was a giant parking lot that backed up to the IHOP that was over there.
Uh-huh.
And that was it.
Yeah. Crazy. I enjoyed watching that. And then like as each season, as I would come back for something, then I would see like the shift gone to Georgetown. And then I, $40 on tolls for two trips to Austin and back. So I was trying to find my way back through Austin without having to go through the toll roads again.
On toll roads that were not voted on, by the way. They were voted against.
Well, they were owned by a, they're owned by a private corporation, right?
Yes.
Isn't that like,
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That was the start of the downfall of Austin. That's right on brand with Austin, new Austin. So maybe.
That's funny. Coming back and I see the high rises, right? And I'm just like, I don't even get into Austin anymore because if one more jackass honks at me just for being alive, just for being alive, like that's really right. But I'm in these like high rises and I'm like, holy shit, this is Rainy Street area right here. And it's just like a totally different, like everything is different over there. So thank God we're down here on our homesteads now, right? Like, thank God we're like in our own spaces. When you listen to people talk about kind of, you know, spirituality and wellness is a better way to put it. Mm-hmm. Wellness, mind, body, spirit, you know, do you hear them saying things like, yeah, we're manifesting a homestead. We're manifesting like we need to get out to the farm. We need to learn how to garden. We need that's like the one thread that runs through some things that everybody talks about. In the wellness industry or in the wellness world.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's like all of our instincts were turned on almost like in childhood. Like I know you were raised around this. I was not, but it was still on my radar.
Yeah.
Totally foreign world. But I was like, no, that's the right way.
That's you're capable. You're strong. You're able. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's just like almost instinctual. Like this, there's something to this.
Yeah.
And this is probably what would be best.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it calls you to it. It called me to it over and over again. Like I always talk about the purpose, you know, my purpose or whatever. And I'm like, well, my purpose has to do with wellness. And I still don't even completely understand exactly like I'm letting God guide me. Right. That's how it should work. But you know, I'm a savant in the garden, man. Like it's weird, but it is about what you were talking about. It's the hands in the dirt, like learning, like you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but it's about your commitment to it.
Yeah. Right? And a lot of people like in the prepper world, you know, they have 10,000 bajillion seeds of all these heirloom seeds and they've got all these plants. And I'm like, well, how many plants have you actually grown? Cause you're going to kill things for 5 years.
Exactly. The best seed bank is your actual soil, by the way.
right. And do you have enough food to get you through the trial and error period? Because if that's what you're preparing for, you're going to die. I'm sorry, but you're going to starve.
Right.
You need to start now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to let you go ahead and speak for me because I'm so tired of saying the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And it is about, and it's fascinating to be able to talk to somebody that understands that investment, right?
Yeah.
And
it's not, you can't fake this experience.
No.
And there's no amount of YouTube videos or even podcasts for that matter that are going to be a replacement for hands in the dirt.
No, absolutely not. And then people say, okay, well, how do I get my hands in the dirt right now? When you go on your vacation, you go to a farm and spend 4 or 5 of your days working on a farm.
One of the first gardens I ever had was on a crappy, tiny patio, south facing patio. Mm-hmm. In a ghetto apartment that was cockroach infested with rats everywhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I did it anyway.
Yeah.
And everything died. Sure.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot so that in my next apartment balcony, I did a little better. Eventually you have a corner of a yard and then you turn into your whole yard and you just go from there. But the point is you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
That perfect situation, the perfect rainy day, the perfect land, none of that exists.
Nope.
And you have to just start somewhere.
Yep. Yeah, you, that's literally the message that I'm sharing like every single day, trying to explain to people like all this time that I've been doing this, they were teaching down here, wasn't working. Even the offering of like master gardeners and things like that, they weren't offering, that was like for hobby retired people. It wasn't like for people that actually wanted to grow food and moms that had kids with them all day long.
Right.
And so all of my stages of all of this stuff, I've had kids on my back, man, the whole entire time to get to, it took me this many years with hands in the dirt and kids on my back to get to, you know, this point to be able to learn these things.
Right.
But it's been an investment of a lifetime. So, but the other side of it is that even though I've like had my hands in the dirt learning about that kind of stuff, I have a special, like there's a click in me that's different. Like I connect with things intuitively. I think it happens in a relationship with nature. Like, I think that's where I learned my intuitiveness. Like, that's where I learned it from.
You had said something earlier, and I actually don't remember exactly what it was, but something that you came to a conclusion or something while you were in your garden on something truly major.
Oh, I always do.
Yeah.
That's the only way. And everything I ever learned about life, I learned from the garden.
Right.
Everything.
Oh, and I've had the exact same experience. I mean, there's really something about it that takes your mind almost to a place it was meant to be.
Yes.
So that it's like in a restful state where you can break things down. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, so I think that I think anybody can do it, but I think it's just nature, right? I think it's grounding. I think it's nature. I think that that's the huge, most important part of it. I think that the good thing about gardening is, especially for people like us that have this desire to like be prepared, like we don't even know what we're preparing for exactly,
right.
But we know, we feel like we need to like have some sort of productive like preparation, you know?
Yeah.
I always tell people like, I'm not trying to live off the grid, but I'm trying to live off the grid when I have to live off the grid. Like I'm trying to when a hurricane blows through, like I'm trying to be able to live off the grid for 2 weeks and not expect FEMA to show up and take care of me.
Right.
You know, but like I've been down these roads with people and I've seen these little, like I've seen how nobody's actually going to come to save you. Right.
And that's true.
And you, well, I know we're going to get into this some more, but you've with a single mom situation, talking about the email, like you were in that situation talking about like, okay, well, I don't have a choice. I have to survive, right? Like I'm in, and I have to stay in Austin because of, you know,
the other situations. Yeah.
Right. And so now cost of living and all these things, I don't have a choice. I have to survive.
Yeah, you have to.
That's where that collective like joining is coming in. It's like, are you waiting for somebody to solve the problem for you?
Yeah.
Or are you learning to tap into all of the resources that are available to you, including your intuition, including
yourself.
Your spirit, yourself, right. Your like mind, body, spirit, all of it, like the whole,
right.
You know, are you taking all of those things into account? So you and I are both pretty active on TikTok. You're actually, you've got a really nice size following and you've been
Few videos go viral.
Yeah.
One of them I think is still up. Uh-huh. I've been banned for the other ones just because of the kind of content that I do make. I'm talking about very hot topics in the health world.
Uh-huh.
It's not always received the best. A lot of people, I haven't had a negative response.
Uh-huh.
And I was blown away by that.
Yeah.
I get, you know, 3,000-4,000 positive comments for every one negative. And that is a consensus kind of what's happening, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's a reflection of you too. I think there's a huge part of that and how much you play into the triggers of the, you know, people that are just trying to make you react, you know?
Yeah. And I don't.
Yeah.
Because I've been there too.
Uh-huh.
So it's almost like when you've been where they're at, you're looking down on them. They're not looking down on you. And there's a, you know, and that's okay. I don't know the last time that I left a negative comment anywhere.
Right.
Because I don't remember when I was that insecure to do so.
Right.
It's in the past. Right. So when someone does that, I'm like, well, I know you're coming from, and it's not a happy place. So I feel sorry for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's a huge deal. That's a huge deal for like the era of forgiveness. But it's also a huge deal for even yourself, like within your own, like,
and that is new, by the way, I will say, it's not like I've always been like that. That's something that came about in my 30s, even in my 20s, a negative comment. So any kind of criticism, I rejected it because it just cut me so deeply.
Yeah.
So I was very insecure.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, you know, I've kind of figured things out, you know, as life kind of just goes on, that I'm like, oh,
yeah.
You know what? I shouldn't let these things affect me because they're not real. This isn't true. What's true is what I say is true. Perception is reality.
Yeah.
So no.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to go along with this.
Yeah. I have to still manage my reactions, you know, to things.
It takes conscious effort for sure.
Yeah. I'm a little confused about the whole TikTok thing happened. So I just recently started being able to go live. And it's because I joined a group, a talent agency group, basically. And so then I had the access to it. I didn't have enough followers yet, but I was ready. Like I was like, I'm eager to like share more of what's happening out here at the farm. Full of it. Like you basically are on screen all the time, like almost Truman Show type of situation.
Right.
And the number of like gifts and likes and things you get are like, you're raising your like social capital basically.
Right.
I see that to a degree on TikTok. I'm like, then at the same time, I'm like, well, shit, if this is what's happening, I want to be on the leading edge of that social capital shit, you know?
Right.
like I want to like be in there.
That's one category of TikTok. Yeah. I don't do that. Like I'm always scrolling at night and I come across the people that pretend to be the AI bots or whatever. And I'm just like, what is going on?
That is weird.
I guess I am 40.
And
okay.
Because the hands are always a thing. Yeah. Like, why do they always do the hands?
Like, I know. And like fake licking an ice cream cone and like all these things. I'm just like, oh, this is like weird kink stuff. I'm just not into it. So, okay. Yeah. Like, good for you making $1 million or whatever. But there's a lot of kind of conspiracy theory kind of stuff.
Yes,
and like
is.
The darker side of TikTok.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's really a cool thing just because I like to hear all sides of the story.
Yeah.
And I think that it's cool that some of it's allowed. I think some of it can be harmful, sure. But yeah. I don't think that all of it is.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not as censored as people think. And I'm saying that as a banned person with several banned videos.
Yeah.
But I understand, you know, if you're smart about your word choice, it's all AI algorithm. Okay. So be smart about the way that you say the same thing and you will not be banned.
That's how I've handled it.
Yeah.
Everybody constantly is like, how is it possible that you're not like getting like slapped all the time?
Right.
And I'm like, I just, it's how I use my words.
That's right.
Yeah. That's like
say
the
it without
words
saying
I use.
It. Yeah.
I'm appreciating this new journey. So what's happening, you guys, is that I'm doing a live daily, sometimes more. And it's basically based on what's happening right in the moment. So like today, the steers and the longhorns were up at the fence. They got a new bit of hay. As a matter of fact, we had an incident with one of the longhorns this week. He decided that he was going to walk over the fence and into the neighbor's pasture. And so our longhorn was on the other side of the fence and he walked over the fence, but then the fence stood back up again. And now he's on the other side of the fence. And so we had to deal with that. But so we got a big a hay bale. My dad had the fence cut out and a gate put in. And so we could, you know, call him back in.
Yeah,
call him back in. He came back in. We got a big load of hay over there. But I had the pumpkins. And so I started taking the pumpkins out to throw out to them. And I was like, oh, this is what people want to see.
This is the real content.
This is the thing. Yeah, this is the thing. So I pulled it out. You know, I'm like beating on pumpkins and like throwing pumpkins over the fence and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so that's what's happening, you guys, is that I'm doing, you know, lives from the homestead. I can't decide like how I feel about it. Like,
TikTok is an interesting platform. Mm-hmm. It's unlike the other ones. It's like YouTube is like a slow crawl to the finish line. You accumulate subscribers over time. You might have a so-called viral video, but not really.
Yeah.
And you kind of get there over time.
Yeah.
TikTok, you make a TikTok, you go to sleep, you wake up in the morning and you have 20,000 followers.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden you have, you know, 2 million views on this video and you're like, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
That's not what I wanted to happen. I mean, it is, right? You put it out there to the world and that was like in the back of your mind for sure. Like, maybe this will be one of those videos. But when it actually happens, it's horrifying. I mean, it's horrifying and it's great and it's all the emotions. But yeah, TikTok is a hair trigger on a spray shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's just like, what is going on? Like, you don't know what you're hitting. You don't even really know what you're aiming at.
Yeah.
And you might just totally strike out. Who knows?
No, that's right. Well, so in my mind, what I've decided that I'm doing on there is being an attractor to this concept, like learning how to homestead. We're learning how to garden. We're learning about wellness. We're talking about things that we can't talk about in other spaces. Right. Basically, like I would love for people to, you know, join in the conversation with me. Just, you know, argue with me. I'm not going to argue with you, but argue with me. Like, tell me I'm wrong. Like, tell me to go look something up. Right. You know, tell me to my, education is in communications. And
oh, wow.
So to me, and I was going to ask you, when I've started watching TikTok, especially the live stuff, because you guys, the live stuff is different than people like getting up and doing dances with their kids.
Right.
It's literally seeing people actually talk about things. I was packing my little, I shout out Cassie a lot, by the way, on this podcast.
Dear, that's
like,
so
it's
funny.
Kind of funny. I do. I shout her out. Now I'm about to be shouting out Raven because.
Yes, please.
Then all of a sudden she jumps on and her comment is, Avery Labels are the best. And then like, I love Avery Labels. And I started thinking about that. So then there was another guy that jumped on. He was like, have you ever kicked a man in the balls?
Okay.
And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
That's just a distraction is all that is, right?
What kind of algorithm are you, what are they putting together catered to you?
Well, I think that there's obviously a single woman thing going on.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Like I'm pretty
you
sure
wanna
there's
kick
a single...
guy in the balls? Like, yeah, I do.
But like, then I started thinking about it later on and I was like, there's a world where somebody thinks that it's exciting to talk about the brand of labels they use. Like the brand of label, it's like team like Longhorns, Texas, University of Texas, go Longhorns, yeah, yeah. Like go Avery labels.
Yeah. Maybe that's a world where they're getting paid to say that. I don't even know. Because I can't imagine being that excited about labels unless I was paying to be.
Gave me one of those moments, because this is what happens in my brain. It gave me one of those moments where I was like, oh, there are some really different people out there than me. Even the worlds within worlds, but even, and then you go back like behind the screen and we go inside that person's brain. And now there's like a whole world inside of their brain that is not the same world that's inside of my brain.
Right.
And you see things so completely different than I see things. So I'm sitting here talking to an audience of people that I have no clue what's acceptable and not acceptable.
Right.
You know, like what do these people think about me and what I say and what I'm talking about? And you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's just kind of interesting.
I think you definitely have the type of vibe where people that don't know what they want, people that maybe don't know who they are, they see you and they're like, there it is. That's it. I want to be more like that. And you fall in that category, which is a small category. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people fall in that. So congrats. But, you know, you have a very magnetic personality. And, I think that that's why, like, the analogy is there's this pimple about to pop. Oh, yeah. Big time. And and I think that it's going to be like a collective thing, like kind of like how you're describing, where someone's going to see it and then someone else is going to be like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, that. And then somebody else. Yeah, yeah, that, yeah. You know, and that's kind of how it happens. And it happens out of nowhere.
Okay. So my whole entire life, and I've just gotten to this point now, I've told myself and been told by the world that I was too much,
too much.
Yeah. Too loud. I don't want to have to deal with the crisis as often as I was dealing with it before. Like I'm tired. I'm ready to like
comfortable.
Now. Comfortable. Yeah. Comfortable. Except that I don't think, on a whole different note, I don't think that we're entering into a comfortable era of humanity.
I don't think so either.
So maybe that's it. Maybe I've just gotten prepared for it. Like I'm like, and then when the crisis comes, like I'm queen of like solve the problems.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to solve
you
some problems.
You definitely have the post-apocalyptic warlord vibe. So there you go.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. This is my island. I've already kicked people off of it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We made some dinner tonight, which the dinner was great, but it wasn't like super special. All very seasonal though.
Very fresh. Very good.
You liked that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think that it had enough. I needed some more coriander and salt in the soup, I think.
I know what you mean, but it's refreshing to have something so clean and crisp though, and not over seasoned.
That's the comment I've gotten a few times recently, is that the food is really clean and fresh.
It is.
You know, and I'm used to eating what I eat. You know, I'm used to we use ChatGPT again, and I learned that Raven uses ChatGPT also.
Oh, yes.
And now she's going to use it for recipes because we're in the same boat.
I'm never just going to Google a recipe ever again.
Never. Just when I think I'm going to just go back to Google because, then I just go over it and I'm like, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
So this is what I did today. You had told me that you don't eat pork or red meat.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, well, I've got a whole chicken. So let's do chicken. I love chicken soup, whatever. So let's just do that. That's easy. I'm also in that as we enter the holiday season, I'm like managing cash flow. Like the markets haven't been super great lately.
Right.
The farmers markets haven't been super great lately. Nobody be scared. However, support my podcast, man, because a couple bucks would help me like keep paying the bills. Again, we're doing chicken or having chicken soup.
And it was
simple, right? But I've got squash, the tromboncino. We did that. Mm-hmm. Lots of jalapenos. My jalapenos are not super hot. So we could put several of those. We should do two nice sized jalapenos. I think that I would have loved that soup three times more than I liked it if it had more jalapenos in it.
I think we
should have gone for more jalapenos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was afraid it was going to be too hot.
I mean, it was good.
And
the way
I don't
it was.
Know your tolerance in terms of heat. And so I was like, okay, well, let's keep it easy on that. Fresh cilantro from the garden, squash from the garden, the onions were from the garden, the cilantro was from the garden. We put the jalapenos. I don't grow garlic, but pretty much everything else. I cooked the chicken in the Instant Pot, took it out, deboned it, put the bones all back in and made broth. So it actually was a bone broth.
Oh yeah.
You know,
and the fat on the top and everything, it was great.
And then we had a nice salad where I am harvesting lettuce now, nasturtium leaves, arugula, spinach leaves, radish, tomatoes, all that stuff came out of my garden. Yeah, we threw a marigold in there. And then, of course, topped it off with the red wine vinegar that I always use. And
speaking of wine, shout out to your wine.
Yeah.
Probably the best, my favorite wine I've ever had. And I'm not.
Seriously?
I swear on my children. Delicious.
You're
I loved it.
You're not the first person that said that.
No, like, it's perfect.
There's people that have said like, this wine is excellent.
Well, because you want it strong, but like sweet, but you mm-hmm. still want to be able to taste all the flavors. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not like a wine connoisseur. Like I have no idea what I'm talking about, but let me tell you something. I've had a lot of wine.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute. This is good wine.
Yeah. This is a perfect farmhouse table wine.
Like, no, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We enjoy it. So she asked me if she could buy it and I told her, no, we don't sell our wine. But I was like,
so I'm going to steal a bottle.
No, yeah. Or you can just hang out with me.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Except you're an hour away from me. Like that's a bit. That's okay. We'll figure it out. We'll date online or something like that. I mean, we can do online dating, that kind of thing. But wine wise, you'll have to come and we'll have to drink wine. We'll have a party. We're going to bring Cassie into this. We're going to have a party.
Absolutely.
We're going to drink wine. Yeah.
An all nighter, 3 hour podcast, you know, whatever.
I'm making friends in a different way. Right?
Real friends.
And I don't give a crap about any of the other stuff,
That's right.
A public face. And you know what? In all honesty, I didn't realize it. I mean, I thought I was being authentic.
I think you were. But
I was.
But you're also evolving.
Exactly. Yeah. But fascinating times to just sit there and just be like, oh, I don't think I even know. I thought I was being authentic, but now I'm like, God, I wasn't. I just was trying to. I wanted to be friends with everybody. I mean, I didn't
that's
really,
natural,
but I did.
And that's and I still struggle with that too. But at the same time, you have to, you know, there's depths to how far you let someone in.
And one of the things you asked me about the my feelings about the pandemic and the masks and you know all of that kind of stuff. My audience on here definitely already knows how I feel about that. Things just changed. You know, people said things to me like, that's not your brand. And I was like, clearly you don't know me at all.
Right.
This is where, and I have talked about this before recently, but that parasocial interaction thing where people think they know who I am.
Right.
Shit. I don't even know who I am. I'm just learning. Right. So how do you know what my brand is? You know what I mean?
I do not like people that reject the idea of change.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you see someone changing, it's not always a negative. And I would really encourage people that have a hard time with seeing someone change or evolve in some way to look inward a little bit and understand maybe why they're feeling that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because more often than not, I feel like change is a positive.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing about it was, is that during that time period, like one of the things I think that has worked out in the benefit of me doing all of the voice conversation, content creation, things that I've done over the years about Grow Local, about the farmers markets, about healthy eating and, you know, all of that kind of stuff is that my messages are trustworthy. They have been the same for 20 years. And when the pandemic came along, I didn't change my tune.
Right.
It was the same message. And then I was blown away that people didn't know, it was as if like all of a sudden I began to understand they don't understand my message.
Right.
You know?
Which is on them, by the way.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Like, okay, I don't even have any interest in, and I lost friends over that whole situation.
Too.
Lots of friends, you know? Or, okay, and so then let's go back to, like, I was trying to be friends with everybody. And I was like, yeah, I'm done with all that, you know? And it was even within my relationship. The bed was dividing. Mm-hmm. Like there were friends that I didn't want to be friends with anymore. I didn't
quality over quantity for sure.
Uh-huh. And quantity has been the campaigner in me for years when I was running for office and when I was trying to get policy to change and when I was trying to get people in Corpus Christi to pay attention to this message that I needed that was so important, these things, these alternative lifestyle things that are still they're still trying to shoot them down as people are moving in that are actually bringing a lot more money to our area that are moving in with that want these alternative things available to them,
right?
They're still being shut down. I'm going to have to go in and talk to the mayor next week about losing the learning garden a couple of episodes ago. It's kind of a long episode. It's about an hour and a half with Tevin Gray, but it was an excellent episode about the Learning Garden and just grow local startup. And I had to cancel a meeting with the mayor because I was afraid I would holler things at her that weren't helpful. But the thing about it is that when you talk about the commitment of learning and developing a piece of land and turning it into a place that grows food, there's 10 acres of investment on a piece of property in Corpus Christi that is a food forest.
Wow.
And they're ready to just give it up because neighbors with no vision can't see what we see, number one. Number two, it needs some support.
Right.
What my plan is to go in and talk to her about is, do you actually have vision? Because if you have vision, you know that what I'm talking about is right. You understand that we're about to be needing to feed people. You understand.
And like even if it's not out of necessity, how is it ever a bad thing?
Because somebody complained. And right. In this city, all you have to do is complain. And this city, I'm not living in the city anymore. But you can listen to my
No, and I hear you. Feathers. But like you're saying, so many people are moving here with that vibe. Pretty soon the complainers are going to be a little bit outnumbered, I feel like.
A meeting happened between the podcast episode, me scheduling my original appointment with the mayor, and then him having an appointment with the director of the Parks and Recs department. And he told her, I don't know if you remember what happened the last time there was some conversation, public conversation about the Learning Garden closing. And then that's how he got to take it out back over again. Mm. Grow Local was giving it up. Basically the executive director that came in behind me was going to give up this project. I exploded. And not only did I explode, but I brought the fire. He reminded her what happened the last time.
Wow.
And so we better be sure we're doing the right thing here before we make a public announcement
about it.
Like, we better make sure we know what the hell we're doing here. And so I'm going to go in and have a really thoughtful, intelligent conversation with the mayor of the city about the vision of the future.
Yeah.
And say, do you have the vision? And because what that garden needs is your support.
Right.
Your support. I'm out here. I can't do anything about it anymore outside of be the voice, a founding voice for this piece of land that can feed people now. Right.
Right.
And grows food without people having to do anything. That's the really important part.
That's right.
It's that poverty mindset again. If I go back to that, the trauma, the wounding, I mean, you know, we're talking about 60 years of industry bashing a community of people, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, and I have to, I speak gently about that because the fact of the matter is that every single person I know, their finances are coming from this, that grew up around here, four generations of people that lived around here. It's because of industry. That's why we exist.
Right,
that's why
right.
we pay our bills. That's how we pay our bills.
Yeah.
You know, all of that. That's been a traumatic codependent relationship.
Yeah, no, it really has. And, you know, I'm all about small business anyway, so I don't really want to stick it to the man too hard on this podcast, but you know what I'm saying? Obviously these types of jobs are a necessity for the function of the world right now, but there's a whole other side of the world that also needs people. And that's small businesses, little local farm owned, whatever, family owned, this and that, where we can feel safe because I'm traumatized. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like anyone that's been a parent in the last 20 years, we're all holding our children closer and closer. I mean, how much closer can we possibly squeeze them to us? And we're trying to protect them. Give me a space where I can let them run in a park and let them have that childhood that I so desperately want them to have. I'll pay any amount of money for that. And I will do anything to make that life happen for my children. And so people are leaving cities like Austin in droves. I mean, they're leaving and they're where do we go? Give them a place to go.
You know, I'm in a group on Facebook. It's called, I think, Welcome to Corpus Christi. And it is the best group that's functioning.
I think I'm in that group
right now.
Yeah.
And every time I go in there and drop something about the farm or something about art happening downtown or anything like that, it gets hundreds of dots of attention. It's an indicator of the vision of the people that were the footprints of putting these these farmers markets and these art galleries and just all of these different kinds of things. We've been calling it to us but also could foresee. I kept saying the only way this farmers market industry stuff is going to work is when the people that move in from other places come here.
Right.
It's not going to be the local. I think that they'll shift. I definitely think there are people that are shift, but again, go back to what we were saying at the very beginning, and that is that there are some people that are just not ever going to wake up to it.
No, that's they're not.
Just not.
And it's the people that are coming here that are actually more motivated to make it great. I mean, mm-hmm. I hate to say that. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, I'm sure, hardcore born and raised people in Corpus that have that vision. Sure. Yeah. But the majority do not.
But it takes a commitment, and it's not an overnight thing.
That's right.
That's the most important part of it. And that's probably the number one most important message that I'm trying to like get across to people when it comes to homesteading and TikTok and doing all of that stuff online and everything, is that like, this is not an overnight thing.
No,
this is,
it definitely gets worse before it gets better.
Okay. We have to have real conversations about what a homestead, the work that required. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at, I'm about to go down a road that I don't know that I want to go down, but if you look at the map of what's red and what's blue, people who don't want to take care of themselves and people that do want to take care of themselves. Now,
I agree more.
Now, and I'm not saying that you can't put the moral coding on some of that stuff too, and some of the other bullshit, you know, whatever.
Look, most people are standing between the 45 yard lines. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Straddling the 50-yard line.
Yes.
Or slightly to one side of it.
Yes.
A lot of the people that are closer to the end zone, well, you know, I think that we're all looking at them like, stop it.
Yeah.
Please stop it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying. Overall, yes.
But if you look at it like that, then you start to understand there is a massive difference between rural and urban people.
Yes.
Urban people shouldn't be making rules for people that want to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I was raised in the urban life, concrete jungle mm-hmm. city. I was raised in Dallas and Austin. Okay, mm-hmm. When we moved to Austin, we moved to South Congress. I was across from the School for the Deaf, and we lived in a tiny apartment.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I would walk around exactly barefoot up and down about. The you know concrete streets and sidewalk. We'd ride mm-hmm. the bus everywhere.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was my life. And we moved there in a Volkswagen bus, and you know, and it was very much that life. But even you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is even being raised like that, though, in the back of my mind, I was like, nope, mm-hmm. I want that freedom. I want to be able to look outside and not see my neighbor's house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's how I was brought up. That was my parents taught me that. And what they taught me was, is that if you live in the city, in the urban areas, you give up a lot of your rights, basically.
That's true.
Yeah. If you live in the rural area, you give up a lot of your protection. And so you're responsible for your protection.
Yeah.
And that's
fair trade.
You know, like, and then basically that was like, they were like, no, we'll take care of our own business,
right?
But don't tell us what to do.
Yeah.
And that's how I was raised. We'll take care of our own business. Don't tell us what to do. You know, mm-hmm. And we also think we're smarter than everybody else. So, I mean,
<There's that. laughs>
we're pretty smart, you know?
Resilient for
yeah,
sure.
Resilient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Resilient. We know it all.
Yeah,
it all.
That's right.
Like, and we get irritated at people that think they do, you know, that kind of thing. Beginning more conversations about homesteading beyond where we are in our little bubble down here, I guess, you know, I've been in a bubble down here by myself for such a long time, like mm-hmm. for a lot of things. You were talking about new people moving to the area and that there are people that are still from here that actually like, yeah, there are. And there are people that are still from here that love it and that appreciate all of it. And we, four generations I know the intricacies of the trauma. Like I can talk about the trauma because I have it in me too, right? So my poverty mindset comes from, I was raised in a culture that was beat down to be slaves to the industry, you know? And so those conversations, like there was a guy that came out here to just help out and volunteer from Philadelphia, and he wants to get like a community group, and he does urban gardening, and he'd get involved in, you know, all of this stuff. And he was talking, and I basically spent the whole day talking to this guy about the trauma that I had related to doing anything with him. And he started talking to me about, because what I really would like to have out here is community. I do want,
right.
Like I've got space for, you know, people to be here.
Like tiny houses or what were you thinking?
No. What I mean is more like, well, I don't even honestly know right now, like maybe. Right. But like right now, really what I'm thinking about is I've got two spare bedrooms. I've got, you know, places for people to camp out. I've got, you know, like So I want woofers here. I want hip campers here. I want to have like people come out to do, to just hang out and garden with me, local volunteers that want to come and just be a part of it. Because if you can't get your hands in the dirt where you are, here's a place, right?
Yeah.
You're learning, right?
And from someone that really knows.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And I'm not afraid to work alongside people. I've got plenty of space to do it, you know? So I do have this desire to create a community, and maybe it's something, you know, maybe it's a community that people are scared of, but potentially, like, you know, just like it's creating its own like vibe, like it's in its own spiritual energetic vibe, like all of that.
I was going to say, I don't know of anything else like that. I mean, I know other people try to do things like that, but it's never, it doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah. Well, and so, okay. So what does that look like? Right. Well, initially everybody's always going to start talking to me about, you know, the public sector and the nonprofit, and you could just go ahead and get your, and I'm just like, no, I already did all that. Right. And I already went down all those roads and I have trauma related to all of that crap. Like I spent the whole day basically like not being the jovial Sagittarius, more like, no, actually being the like very serious, Sagittarius that's like, okay, yeah, well, we have to have real conversations about, there's no Sagittarius that's serious like that. But my Cap rising, she will fucking clean it up and get shit done, you know? Like, and she's like, no, you're not taking us back down that road again. We're not going back down that road again. And it's because I am embedded with that same like poor farmer, poor, you know, industry, enslaved to the industry kind of like wounding inside of me. And I don't want to get involved in any of that anymore. You know?
Yeah. No, but I think you're going to carve a new way.
Yeah.
Very much.
Well, I don't think there's any other choice.
Something
especially
that
for
has
me.
Not been done.
Right. Leading as a collective for people that are ready for that, right? It's recovery. We're recovering from life. That's what I always like to tell people. Like, I'm in recovery. I'm in, you know, I deal with recovery, but I'm dealing with like codependency recovery and life recovery and just the world that is like poisoned me basically.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the habits that I still have to this day are still a part of like, you know, that fire of desire and still burning inside of me. And I think that the thing that I thought was really interesting about the conversation that you and I have in common is we have a lot of things in common, clearly.
We do.
But is the idea of going through and down that recovery road and just being like, yeah, I was that. And I'm not, and I want to be very clear. I'm not sober, but I'm in recovery.
Right. And I had said that earlier. I'm not sober either, but I was for a long time. For almost 6 years, I did not drink a sip of alcohol. I wasn't around it.
I didn't want to. Gone through fasting phases.
Right. Yeah. And at the end of that, the reason it was only 6 years, I kind of had this epiphany that, oh, you know what? It was never the alcohol.
Right.
That's it was the never ticket. The drugs. It was never anything other than I didn't want to be sober, and there was something broken inside of me that I didn't know how to fix. Mm-hmm. So I was constantly repairing it the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once that was repaired, it's like, well, I don't really need those things anymore. Uh-huh. And I can casually drink the best cup of wine I've ever had, you know, during a podcast, and it's not a problem. And I go home and tomorrow is a new day and it's totally fine. That wasn't always the case, but it's because that thing that led me down a different way in the past is not there anymore. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, I still had to go through more of the tower moment of the breakup that happened last year, because the first entrance of real recovery that I did was, I mean, basically we're entering the time period last year. I mean, listeners of the podcast that've been listening all this time could go back. They remember, you know, that this time of year last year, it was like, Aislinn's going through something. Like, there's something going on. And I wasn't like super public about like suicidal talk every single day.
Right.
But my closest family and friends, my best friends knew. And they knew that like I was to the point where I couldn't handle it anymore. I was physically sick. I was mentally sick. I was spiritually sick. Everything about me was sick. I was on the floor every day and I was dealing with suicidal thoughts, no doubt. I don't remember having, well, that's not true. I had immature suicidal thoughts when I was younger, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't remember having like,
what's the plan type thoughts?
Real, like, I like not just what's the plan, but I literally cannot get up anymore. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be here. Everyone would be better without me here right now.
And that's the lie, right? Yeah. That's mm-hmm. always the lie mm-hmm. that you've told yourself, because you feel that it's, you're locked in a room. There's no way out.
That's where I was.
It's black everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then finally someone says, well, turn on the light. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, what light? It's mm-hmm. like, well, there's a light switch on every wall, dumbass. Get up. And then you turn the light on and there's a door on every wall also. And you've just been in there laying on the ground, you know, freaking out for, well, not no reason.
Right.
But a fixable reason.
Yeah. Yeah. But to way that I always tried to describe it was that, like, I had a physical embodiment of the pain, and that tends to be how I am about. And now that's been my communication device. I understand it now. Like, now I'm like, oh, my body is a communication device.
Absolutely.
And when it's in pain, it's telling me something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a book, I mentioned it a lot on TikTok, but it's by there's a cancer center, I'll call it that, mm-hmm. In Mexico. It's called Hope for Cancer. Uh-huh. They've healed people of things that, you know, they were sent home to die. Mm-hmm. And these people are 10 years totally radical remission, as they call mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they wrote a book, and in that book, it's very interesting how it talks about people with common traumas and where cancer shows up in their body.
Uh-huh.
People that are very angry, liver cancer.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Or bowel cancer.
I started doing Qigong because somebody told me at the end of the year last year that you're angry and your liver is like, I was like, oh, okay.
Yes.
And I think they were right. I mean, think that opened, I think that opened the portal that needed to open.
That's right. Yeah. And it's all healable, but it will show up in parts. Like I was talking about thyroid issues. It's a lot mm-hmm. it's tied to throat chakra energy, which is expression through voice. Is mm-hmm. who's listening? No one's listening to me. Mm-hmm. No one. I'm talking and talking and no one can hear me.
That is me right now, by the way. I'm talking and talking and nobody can hear me. I've been talking and talking for 44 years and nobody can hear me. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
well, I can hear you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Right. And I think a lot of people are
needing. You heard me before
I even
opened my mouth, though. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like you described that earlier about my thyroid, you know, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that's a perfect example.
Breast cancer, domestic violence, hand in hand.
Uh-huh.
Not that everyone that has breast cancer is a victim of domestic violence, but very, very common.
But sometimes we're passing like energetic threads from our ancestors too, right? I think that's like, I think about my aunt, because my aunt was breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she was definitely very much part of the conversation of passing some ancestral shit.
Healing from cancer, it's not a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I'm telling people not to do radiation and chemo. I'm very, very vocal about that. Mm-hmm. For some people, that is the best option because mm-hmm. the other option's harder, way harder.
Right. Honestly,
but it is an option.
that's a very good way to say it, because I often tell people, like, you know what? When people come to me and they're like, I have a pain, I'm sick, but I also know that there's another way, but I need to go do this because I'm scared. And I'm like, then go do that. Take the path of least resistance. And couple it with this other concept that you can start working your way through. Is the book you're talking about called Cured? Is that the book?
No, that's another great book. Uh-huh. So is Radical Remission. Uh-huh. That's another great book. That one's written by, I think it's like Janelle something. She's a PhD. She's studied a bunch, lots and lots of people that have had this so-called radical remission. And it's basically the 9 key factors. How come all these people did these nine things the exact same? Mm-hmm. And they're like across the world. It's not like they were all talking.
Right.
And it's like kind of breaking it down to what's that about. Uh-huh. Another great book is that's not necessarily cancer related. It's called The Blue Zone book. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah. I actually have that book.
Right. It's a fantastic book. And it's the same thing. It's like, how come all these people kind of do things the same way and then they live to be 120? No problem. Mm-hmm. Still bending down on mm-hmm. their, getting on their knees, you know, and then getting mm-hmm. back up off the ground very mm-hmm. easily at 120. Mm-hmm. I mean, in America, it's unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
actually that makes me think about one of my thoughts about the new world concept, the world separating concept mm-hmm. is that there's a world of people dying at age 65 in peace in death. That's not the right word, but there's no, like, it's not a good end of life. You know, like end of life should be like a good thing, not a bad thing.
Right? And on your terms.
Yes. Okay. And so, all right. Okay, so you've got that happening and it's like sick in the, I mean, I just watched my ex-mother-in-law go through the system of death and it was the mm-hmm. most horrid thing.
Oh yeah.
And of course she was 80, but honestly, still, the way that we're going at things now, I'm like, yeah, and still, of course, still, but like 65, right?
Yeah.
Like people that won't even make it to retirement, that's the next era. But then at the exact same time, there's a whole other group of people that are living on to be like 160 years old. Oh, and yeah, we're like living out on farms. No. And we're like out working when we're 120 and we're still doing the labor. And I actually, that's my vision now. That's what I'm seeing now.
And it's going to get more out of control. I think there will be like these, like you're saying, worlds within worlds. In mm-hmm. some worlds, they grew up in the city. They've never even grown a single plant. They die at 45 of natural causes, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you have like these hippie communes off grid that are mm-hmm. living to be like 140. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the dream, right? Eventually, if it keeps going the way that it's going, I mean, the society is dividing.
Yes.
But that's why also I'm so passionate about getting the message out there that you can heal yourself, because what does that really look like? It looks like you're growing your own food.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you going to Whole Foods, making $1 million so that you can drink a green smoothie every morning.
Right.
That's not the vision. The vision is you need to take control here. Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? And what does it look like?
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to the same conversation we were having earlier, that it's like, when you live rurally, when you live on the outside, there's nobody to take care of you.
Yeah. Well, you're painting a very clear picture though, which is that the veil is being lifted on the whole system, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And it's looking a lot like now it's an above the table transaction of control for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But at what price, right?
Like, but do you think that that's, has come on in other people? Have
I think
other
it
minds
is more
switched?
Than it's not.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know, you know?
You
I
think mean, collectively we've hit a tipping point?
Yeah, I do. And I think that with things like the internet and AI and all this, I mean, if you go on there right now onto ChatGPT and you type in, can you heal cancer with food? It doesn't really give you a direct answer.
Uh-huh.
So what does that mean? That means that they're not letting it have the information because it's not a no.
Uh-huh.
Right. Well, why can't it tell me no? Uh-huh. Because no's not the answer.
Right.
And anyway, with the whole big pharma thing, you know, you can get on this, all these conspiracy theories. It's very easy in the time that we're living in to believe even the most wild conspiracy theories that are out there, because things are so effed up that it's like, well, it must be a lizard telling people what to do, because like, this doesn't make any sense. Right. So like you hear these like insane conspiracy theories and you're like, you know what? Shit, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I actually don't think that. The more that I've kind of been in the world of telling people with cancer, you can heal this. Mm-hmm. You need to educate yourself. You need to make radical lifestyle changes. And that doesn't mean eat an iceberg salad every night.
Right. No.
It means from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, you're going to live in a different way now.
Yeah.
Because the way you were living gave you cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be, well, you probably not, but a lot of people would be just blown away by how many people reject that. And they're like, well, I can't start eating something different. I'm like, well, then you need to do chemo and radiation. Right. It's your best bet.
Right. Right.
So do exactly. that. But then why
and
are you here?
That's where you're that's where you're going to spend that money. Like that's the choice. Yeah. And I think that an era of depression basically is pushing us into this. We're going to have to make a choice on what you spend your money on.
Right.
You know, and you can't just say anymore, oh yeah, there's a pill for that, which is, I mean, essentially for the last decade or two, that's been the answer to everything. It's like, I can pay somebody to solve that problem for me.
That was definitely, I think it's been a big marketing thing, not just in big pharma, but across the board, kind of like the old way was old and poor and we're in a better new world now. And it's like, no, we're not. What the hell are you talking about? Like the earth is the same.
Uh-huh.
And as much as we keep trying to change, let's remember how we were for thousands of years.
Yeah.
Unscathed, right? Uh-huh. Like this new way sucks.
Uh-huh.
Children dying of brain cancer at an alarming rate that's escalating every year. Okay, let's take a look at this because something is wrong here.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Autism was becoming like like people were trying so hard to connect that the autism was being created by the vaccinations and the way the vaccinations were being the way they were being transferred, whatever the carriers were, they were using on them. And I'm not saying I don't have a completely firm like feeling about that. And I'm kind of past that phase of my life where I don't have to vaccinate my kids anymore and that they're adults and they can make those decisions for themselves. And back in that era, I was still, you know, 90s child trying to just do the best that I could. And nobody else was, there sure as hell wasn't anybody down here in Corpus Christi, Texas area talking about any of that stuff.
Right.
So I was having to talk to people about it all by myself or talk to a doctor about it all by myself, you know. the small little home birthing community all
very
by myself.
Very taboo in the 90s. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was. And so when I was making all of those decisions about that in the early days of autism, I started saying, okay, well, maybe, but to me, it feels like it's bigger than that. Like it feels like these kids are like more intelligent than we are.
Not
like,
everyone that's ever had lung cancer was a smoker, right?
Right.
But a lot of people that smoke get lung cancer. So I think it's the same kind of logic there, which is what triggers the autism.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see, and this is not disputable in my opinion, you see these videos of these little toddlers walking around, talking, laughing, clapping their hands, running around, and then all of a sudden they don't talk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very irritable and they have chronic diarrhea and they have IBS symptoms and they have this full body rash and like, you know, all these different things. And it's like, well, hold on, something's going on here. This isn't just, oh, they have autism. Well, yes, they, you can categorize them as having autism, but what's really going on here?
Yeah.
So RFK was on Joe Rogan and he did an entire
some of that interview.
Yeah. And that's a really good interview. I've been directing a lot of people to that because he really goes down the deep dive of like the whole ethyl mercury thing. And the reason that I want people to hear that is because conspiracy theorists, as great as they are their own worst enemy a little bit, because they are like, they're poisoning kids with ethyl mercury on purpose to give them autism. Right. And I'm like, well, hold on. I don't think that was what happened. It's just that someone way up made a decision that looked good on paper and that's what happened.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, it's not a lizard, right? We've been through this. It's not like a demon. Like, okay, it's just a guy or a woman, someone making the best financial decision way, way up.
Yeah. I also think that actually leads me to the agricultural industry with the farmers that are still doing things that at this point, I honestly believe outside of the ones that just are never going to know that the people that most farmers know now, they're just not willing to face it because it hurts too bad to recognize that the choices that they were led to make, the decisions they were led to make by our country, by our government, to feed America, right? Literally why their grandchildren are having issues. Like it's literally why, and they know it, right? So what they're doing instead is just choosing not to like face it. And that, let's go all the way back to the recovery beginning of this conversation where it's like, we don't want to face the pain. So we numb with every single thing we can come up with to numb, you know, buy more insurance. Maybe if I buy more insurance, maybe if I build all my kids a house, maybe if I, but in the meantime, I'm certainly not going to have an honest conversation with some little hippie redheaded girl who thinks she can tell people that at the beginning of this conversation, we're talking about being in recovery and we're talking about like the idea of like the pain in the body is so intense that we want to stop living.
Right.
And I mean, really, if you think about it, I think that that's essentially where we have come to as a human existence. The pain in the body is so immense that we're either drugging ourselves out completely.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not just talking about drugs. I'm talking about sugar.
And television.
Television.
Like scrolling.
And scrolling. All of that. All of that. Or trying to heal. Like, I mean, we're – I love the hope.
Well, you know, one thing that I've told other people, because I used to have really bad panic attacks, that was one of the reasons I started drinking was, oh, if I drink alcohol, I don't have anxiety.
Right.
So it started in an innocent place, much like the farmers, you know, spraying all this crap. Well, wait, hold on. We can feed way more people.
Right.
Well, at what cost, right?
Right.
Well, at what cost? Because then it was, well, I don't want to ever be sober.
Right.
And well, now I'm hungover, so I'll just take Klonopin.
Yeah. You know? Now it's the same
and
thing.
And now I'm tired, so I need something to wake me up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just kept going. And it was like, but at the same time, that suffering was better than the suffering I was going to face being sober in my mind.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I got pregnant, full disclosure, that I got sober on a dime. But I'm glad that happened.
Right.
And that's not everyone's story, you know. Right. But it was my story. And I got sober on a dime. And for months, I can tell you, and this is the advice that I give. I've talked to a lot of addicts. Oh, it's so hard that first couple of weeks. And I'm like, yeah, but you know why, don't you? It's because you've been manipulating time. And now you're not going to be able to do that anymore. So now you have to live.
Right.
Now you have to live second to second. And that one's just as long as the next one and the next one. And it's like this, what the fuck am I going to do? It's like, you're going to learn how to be bored. because you've forgotten that.
That's it.
And guess what? You know what boredom is? It's the thing that happens right before you have a really creative genius idea that changes your entire life. You have to be bored.
Yeah.
Boredom is the key to unlocking all creative potential going forward. But you'll see this with like newly sober people is, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. I want to try all these new hobbies.
Uh-huh.
But that's scary to me because I'm like, well, hold on. Because
now you're transferring.
You need to learn how to be bored. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to sit on your ass and just not do drugs. Mm-hmm. Okay. And not call up your friend that you know always has them and not drink an entire bottle of whiskey or whatever it is. You're just going to sit there. And when it's bedtime, you're going to go to sleep. And tomorrow you're going to do it all over again. That doesn't sound very appealing.
Mm-mm.
But 6-7 months deep, all of a sudden it's the greatest thing in the world because you feel so much better afterwards.
I just like heard something when you said all that I haven't heard before.
Yeah. And the other thing I will tell people that are suicidal, because they do go hand in hand, sobriety and mental health, is that you can be totally lost in it. Like, have you ever had a panic attack?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
So one of the most horrifying things you could do is feel crazy, legitimately crazy. Mm-hmm. And then people are telling you, it's okay, you're going to feel normal again. It's like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Once I felt crazy, I can't be normal again.
Uh-huh.
But that's a lie. You actually can.
Uh-huh.
And I wish I could screen that to the rooftops when people feel suicidal or they're about to make that plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hold on a second, because this too shall pass. You just have to get to the other side of it.
Yeah.
Trust me. Do you really want to give up the opportunity to be surprised?
Uh-huh.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. My thing always was the thing that drew me, like you were just talking about, was that I'm an accountable person and I have plans.
Yeah.
And I better get the fuck up off this floor and go deal with my children who, you know, Christmas is in 2 days and they need their presents wrapped. Like, seriously, that's why I'm alive. Like,
that is literally
why I'm alive, is because that thing, that surprise, that thing that I'm accountable, but that thing that was coming next, like I didn't want to miss it. You know, I didn't want to miss that, experience with my children, or that's probably the best way to describe it. I didn't want to miss that experience with my children.
And even for the people that don't have that thing, who are you to say? And do you really, can you really put a cap on it right now and just say nothing ever good is ever going to happen ever?
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? You have no idea what tomorrow aliens could come, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. And in any given second, aliens show up, they snap their fingers. No one ever dies. Everyone's happy again for all of eternity. I mean, it could happen, right? So it's like, well, don't do that, because you don't know what tomorrow, a week, a year looks like. You have no idea who you're going to meet. You have no idea what is going to happen. And please, please just give it an opportunity to happen, because it will most likely be great.
I think the hardest part for me always, I'm just going to keep going back to it over and over again, because this is where it is for embodiment for me. And that is that I feel physically in pain.
Mm.
Like, I can feel the shit that's occurring around me. That's that sensitive, empathic, like, I know it. I know the pain that's going on around me. And, and some days I'm just like, but I find it interesting when you talked about the boredom. That feeling, because boredom feels bad.
It feels awful.
Hurts.
It's a weight. Yeah.
God, it's like, as a matter of fact, you were mentioning the centaur on that. Like, to me, what it feels like is that, like, I've pulled back the string on my bow.
You're
and
just
I'm
holding
just
it.
Holding it. And I'm just holding it. And I'm like, ah, this is so boring and it hurts.
Yeah.
And can I just please let go? You know, like, and so instead what I do is I run to one of the addictive things that lets me let go. I can let go, you know, when really I'm still, like, the next morning I still wake up and I'm still holding this.
Right.
You and I speak the same language.
We do.
And I think that makes life a lot easier. I don't have to explain things to you. You know, I don't say things to you and you just kind of look at me like, what is she talking about? You know?
I can't get enough of it. Come on.
so the conversation gets deep fast. So hopefully, the listeners are down for hearing all of that. Interesting, just like, you know, rabbit chasing today. You know, I think we did a lot of rabbit chasing, but at the same time, I also think that anytime I have the opportunity to get somebody in the room to talk about wellness in a whole different sphere than what we're being fed, basically, And I mean fed by like the spiritual community, fed by the wellness community, fed by mm-hmm. the government. It's all the same. Let me pay somebody to solve a problem for me, whether you're a wellness guru or whether you're a doctor selling things anymore.
The benzos, like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know any of that stuff anymore. So a doctor selling it.
Yeah, the very, very dangerous drugs that they hand out like candy. Yes, those.
Yeah. You know, have you seen the show? There's a show on HBO Max called High Maintenance. Mm-mm. High Maintenance is, it's actually, I didn't realize it when I started, but several seasons. And the one thread that goes through every episode is a bicycle guy that delivers marijuana.
Oh, okay.
And they're in New York. Cool. And so he's like going around and the very last season, he gets hit by a car on his bike. So he breaks his arm, right? And they take him to the ER. He goes into the ER and he's laying in not a private bed and, you know, in New York, busy and, you know, all the crap going on. And apparently the doctor can't come and like do the surgery or reset the arm or whatever until Monday. Right.
Oh, wow.
So he's about to be like on drugs for like 4 days and the nurse actually just tells his sister or whatever, when she comes to visit him, like, oh, don't worry. We'll keep him drugged. You know?
Yeah. Like no big deal. Yeah.
Well, then the season ends with basically he's like, he's an trying addict. To figure it out. He's not exactly an addict, but he's like really gets these noises that go off in his ears.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just like all of these interesting things. And so you see that like he sold marijuana and he did a little bit of like psilocybin mushrooms and every once in a while he'd have that or whatever, but there was nothing like unhealthy about the relationship that he had with marijuana or even the people. Like he was really good at like being able to go into situations and then leave. Well, then there's like one episode where he's like running around like in the Central Park or whatever, like a crazy person, like on drugs, you know,
wow.
like, yeah. And so he's having these moments and it happened because of the system, basically.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the way that the system was set up to take, oh, like it's no big deal. Like we're just going to drug you for 4 days until the doctor can get here to like do the surgery or whatever. Yeah. And we're talking about trying to get into universal healthcare. Like that's cute because we're going to all be laying in a room being drugged with our arms broken.
And it's whatever drugs they want us to have.
Yeah.
It's not something that we're consenting to, especially for our children. So it's dangerous territory.
The one question, and now we cannot go on and on, but the one question I answered the other day, somebody said something about they were doing something with universal health care and trying to get it and blah, blah, blah. And I just said, I just have one question. I just have one thought. And that is, why would you ever want universal health care to come from a system that doesn't value wellness?
Right. There it is.
Like, that's it. Like all these times I've been trying to talk to different friends about this whole concept and going back to it's outside your brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but no, but you care about people and you take care of people and wellness and hippie and farmers markets and organic. And yeah, you should totally be on board with all this stuff.
The
and
government.
I'm like, yeah, I'm like, hi, I don't know if you've noticed this, but we don't live in a society or in a government or in a culture that values wellness.
Right.
So why would I want to give them control over my healthcare when they don't value wellness even at the level that I value it?
People don't have eyes to see.
Yeah. Maybe they're not intended
to. I had a conversation, I'll tell you quickly, 30 seconds or less. I had a conversation with a woman once in some like play place, you know, like how they have like the inflatable stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was going on and on and on about how she had just had a baby here. She's from Canada. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, it was like a 4-star hotel. Like I was there for 3 days. People were fluffing my pillows for me. Mm-hmm. It was the best experience I've ever had. Totally different than the experience that I had in Canada. I mean, they just like, they don't even let you stay in the hospital room for 24 hours before they're trying to kick you to the curb. And you're usually sharing the room with several other women who are in active labor. And it's a nightmare. And I shit you not, about 30 seconds later, she told me that she was for socialist medicine and wanted that kind of system to come to America. And I said, did you just hear what you just said? Are you even listening to yourself talk? Like, okay, you know, so some people, it just flies about 10 feet over their head.
Yeah. And it's not my responsibility to save the world. It's not my responsibility to go around calling everybody a dumbass either.
You know,
like it's my responsibility to take care of myself and to be that like beacon that can help and be available, which that's what I like about the whole content creation era that we're living in.
That's a great way to put it though, like a lighthouse, right? Because mm-hmm. you're calling people to you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's like kind of the vibe of being in your 20s is you're like, oh, I should, you know what? I shouldn't be so judgmental and I should be more empathetic and I should cater to other people and I should like learn to understand where they're coming from. But then as you get into your 30s into your 40s, you're like, you know what? Fuck that. I need to create a safe space for me and control who's coming into that.
Right.
But also I want people in it because it's like, you know, like I'm happy over here, guys. And it's not, you're not happy over there. Like, let's figure this out.
Yeah. Come be happy with me.
Be happy.
Honestly, come be happy with me here on the farm, man. Like I'm enjoying it and you keep me from being bored. So I'm not sitting there like trying to figure out what to do with my boredom, you know?
Right. Like, that's right. It's a dangerous territory there.
I want to know more about how people, I want you to tell us about how you, how people can find you. Like, I know you're, you mentioned TikTok and I know you're, you've got a homesteading business.
Tell me. So I'm Coastal Bend Homestead. I went the generic route on that one.
I think it's great. Good. That's a good name. That's
well,
good.
I was really surprised when I was searching the Secretary of State website and it wasn't claimed. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, that's the no-brainer, I guess, because I'm not creative enough to come up with something cute. Yeah. Like Freedom Harvest Farms or anything like that, you know, and or the Unhinged Homesteader, you know, all these other hilarious names and they're very cute, but I'm not like that. I was like, you know, I'm going to go the generic route on this one. Yeah. So you can find me on Facebook under Coastal Bend Homestead. And if you want to find me on TikTok, it's Tradcore Mom, like traditional core. It's like, you know, they have like cottage core.
Oh.
So it's TRADCORE Mom.
Got it.
Yeah.
Trad core mom.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Thank you so much for being here.
For sure. Thanks
I enjoyed
for
it
me.
More than I can even express.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Really, really, really like looking forward to developing our friendship and having some girls. Like, I think that we've got like, I think we've got a little like tribe like formulating around here.
We do.
I have a feeling about it. Thank you guys also always for being here at the table with me. This has been an excellent time. Still lots of evolution occurring on the podcast this year. I know you guys are not surprised because y'all all know me well enough to know that I go with the flow. I hope you'll listen to last week's episode where I talk a little bit about Thanksgiving and just kind of where am I going with all of this. And you may find that I have episodes that come on where it's just me, and you'll probably very likely find episodes that will come on where I've got people that are regulars because I like that concept a lot. And of course, you all know that you can help me very much. You can help me know where I'm supposed to be doing a podcast if you share the podcast with your friends, like the podcast. Tell your friends about this interesting conversation that's being had at the dinner table every week. And if you're interested in supporting me, you know, I do the Patreon stuff and then also go to the podcast website, dinnertabletalks.com and click support the podcast at the top and throw a couple of bucks at me. That helps me know where I'm supposed to be every week. Thank you all so much for joining me. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you. I love you. And I'm so grateful to be here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll see you next time.
All right.
Bye, friends.